Bienvenidos a My Stogie Mystical Game with your hosts, Don Gonzalez,
Mark Connolly,
ooh, and Kevin Gonzalez.
That's what you said last time.
Oh. Hey, it's Kevin Gonzalez.
Use that fake Ready Voice.
Ready Voice.
Voice.
Yeah.
Look at me, I'm still in the Spanish mode. This is episode 43, and we have three segments for you. We're going to start off with what are we smoking now. I think we are all smoking tonight. And, yeah, don't know if we're smoking anything different. I think mine is different. You're drinking something different. Segment number two is we will start off with a discussion about cultural appropriation. And if we have time, we'll follow that up. These are going to be kind of a mini segments. And the second one, if we have time, will be about wellness and kind of a Catholic perspective on wellness.
All right.
Wellness. See how many times I can say that. And then we'll close out with our new segment on asking, or what advice would you give your younger self? And Kevin, with his old 30-something self, will give that advice today, to a six-year-old self.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, Kevin, What are you smoking now?
Same thing as Mark.
Ah.
This is JR, isn't it?
No,
this is Drew Estate.
Drew Estate Undercrown Shade, which is a Drew Estate that's not flavored like you usually have.
Yeah, it's not my normal good stuff. Is this similar to the one I had before? It tastes similar to the one I had before that was there. I think the one I had before was, I think, of the acid line. It was called Toast.
Yes, that's right.
This one's nice. This one's toasty, too.
Yeah.
I can definitely taste the it's definitely nutty and definitely toasty. I'm still trying to pick up.
What does that mean when you say toasty? Because you've used that phrase before, or that term. I mean, it tastes like bread that's been put in an oven.
To me, yes, actually.
Fair enough.
I don't know what it would mean to most guys that would use that term. And
But when you say toasty, do you mean it actually reminds you of toast? I mean, because you're describing a flavor profile.
Yeah, I mean, it almost tastes like I put raw nuts on a toasted slice of bread and then smoked it.
All right.
So it's nutty and toasty.
Nutty and toasty.
Nice.
And it's smooth. I'm smoking the crud out of it. It's burning quick.
Yeah, this is one of the... Well, I smoked this last week, so... And I've reviewed this before. It's a mild cigar. It's easy to smoke. It burns well. This is a 60 ring gauge by 7 inches, I believe it is. And got it off Cigar Bid, so got it budgeted. The one thing I have noticed is that I don't know if I've got to do something with my humidifier or what, but the wrapper keeps splitting. That's happened on probably half of these that I've smoked is the wrapper is split. Hmm. But I've been able to keep smoking it, so.
Mine's fine.
Yep. And I am pairing this with some Dewar's blended Scotch whiskey aged 12 years. I got some of this for Christmas, and I caught this on sale at Specs, and I like it.
I will give our seasoned listeners two guesses at what I'm drinking, and the first one doesn't count.
Well, it'd be a fair guess, I think, to say either lemonade or coffee.
It would be coffee. Coffee indeed.
And Don, are you smoking anything new and different today?
I am. It's similar to what I smoked last week, I believe. This is Arturo Fuente Gran Reserva or Reserva Sun Grown, and it is the regular Gran Reserva popular binder, whatever that means. I suspect that means that it's Dominican, and so that's the binder and the filler, and it has an Ecuadorian grown, sun grown wrapper leaf, and it's a medium bodied cigar. My inclination was right. Handmade in the Dominican. So even though it has Ecuadorian wrapper, the rest of it is Dominican. Has a good, really good draw on it. A little bit of a cedar taste to it. That may actually come from the fact that it's wrapped in a cedar sleeve. And, yeah, that's all I'm drawing from it right now. I'm a little surprised at how well it's doing because I left this out on my desk for a couple of weeks. I thought I'd take a chance on it. I guess the humidity levels in my house were of the appropriate type. That's actually not something unusual for our neck of the woods. It tends to be humid this time of the year. We've skipped right over spring in Texas. We're already in summer. It was over 90 degrees today. So, anyhow, I'm not your weather report and my cigar, and I'm drinking Pirate again.
All right. So, this is a Connecticut shade wrapper, and yours is sun-grown. And so the difference is the shade wrappers are actually grown under, I'm going to call it like a cheesecloth almost. There's a screen over the tobacco.
Right.
And the sun-grown or not. And the shade, the sun-grown will be a darker hue, a redder, even bolder. And shade will be a light color. And that's true to form in these. And we were talking the other day about the flavor of a cigar, and apparently about 75% of it comes, they say, from the wrapper. And I guess that makes sense because that's what your tongue is on if you're sticking it that far in your mouth, I guess. But it, obviously your lips are touching that. So there. That's what we're smoking now.
All right. Segment two. Cultural appropriation.
Cultural appropriation. What does that even mean?
Well, as one of my very eloquent speaking seniors shared with me, I got to back this up a little bit. So this all came about yesterday. So we're right in there. I got to frame this a little bit better. We're right smack in the middle of the testing season. So honestly, school is over. Effectively. Real instruction was over last week because all of this week and all of next week are STAR testing, which is the standardized test for knowledge and skills that's given by the state. And the AP College Board testing has begun as well. And our school is 100% pre-AP and AP curriculum, so all our kids are taking AP tests right now.
Okay.
So it's very difficult to try to continue any sort of instruction when your kids are all testing. And then the week after that, we do end of course testing. So they're done.
Yeah.
So what happens is you wind up getting, only part of your class. So it's really difficult for you to plan any sort of real lesson. And what I've done, and on top of that, most teachers get displaced from their classrooms. Because in the state of Texas, they will not allow a teacher to administer the same subject matter that she or he has taught in the test to their students. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess they're assuming that there's a likelihood that the teacher may help the students.
Because we're all cheaters.
Yeah.
So anyway, on top of that, we've all been displaced from our rooms, and I had to fight to keep my classroom, which is the courtroom. So it shouldn't be used for anything other than what I teach, but that's another story. So anyway, I came in and sat down in my first class that I teach yesterday, because as the coordinator of school, I have a truncated teaching schedule. I only teach two classes, and the rest of the time I do administrative duties since I wear kind of two hats. And I have all of my upperclassmen in the early class. And one of the girls, I walked in right after the bell rang, and they were having a conversation. I have one student, she's not the only student, but she is one of like two or three Anglo students that I have in the class. And she was saying that she really wanted to have a quinceañera because she really thought, she didn't articulate this very well, but she really liked the beautiful dresses that were worn. She liked some of the ceremony that was involved. Clearly, she didn't know all of the ins and outs of quinceañera. And some of the Hispanic girls were put off by it.
Okay.
And so this led to a discussion. And I don't know if you've seen this or not, but about a week or two ago, a high school girl, presumably a senior at some school, decided to wear a prom dress that was inspired by Asian attire.
Okay.
And she caught all sorts of flack over it. Really? So, yes, because she was appropriating the Asian culture. And so that led to a discussion in the class, and I let it happen. And I have to say this. What's funny is that the kids were all talking all over them, all over each other. And so I decided to stop the conversation, and I sent one of the kids to my office because I have a Native American talking stick that I got at the Native American Museum, National Museum in Washington, D.C., like 10 years ago. What's funny to me is that nobody picked up on the notion that I'm using somebody else's cultural icon to have this discussion. So they could have made the argument that I was appropriating Native American culture.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
So let me just ask. So basically, you have to be holding a stick to talk?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Because...
Sort of an abbreviated Robert's Rules of Order?
Yeah, because... Like adults, kids talk all over each other and they interrupt each other and they, you know, they don't get this opportunity in class very often. And one of the things that the reasons I did it, and this was an impromptu lesson, is that the kids have complained that they don't have an opportunity to discuss current issues in class, particularly their law related classes. So I thought I would give them that opportunity in my class. So long as they were respectful of each other. I said, you can have any opinion you want.
Yeah.
But you have to respect each other, and you have to be prepared to defend your positions. You just can't come in here with some crazy idea and just throw out things and not be able to support them.
Right.
So, essentially the notion of cultural appropriation, as I understand it, is that it's normally... the finger is normally pointed at white people. There's just no nice way to say it. Because, you know, you white people are the source of every evil in our culture.
Right.
And their argument is that because you come from privilege, that you don't have the right to steal from their culture. And so this led to... This led me to ask that we had this one girl in my class who is the president of our Youth LULAC Council.
Okay.
Which stands for the League of United Latin American Communities. And she's one of my best students. She's very vocal now as a senior. It's really been neat to see her develop as a young woman because she's become more confident. When I first had her as a student as a freshman, she actually froze during a public presentation. So it's been really interesting to see her develop.
Yeah.
And she is an activist. She goes to marches. She's participated in women's marches and marches for DACA students and for all sorts of different things. So she believes strongly what she believes in, and she actually does something about it. And so I respect that. And, you know, as I told her at the end of the... I was just so impressed at how clearly she articulated her position that at the end of class, I said, you know, I was really proud of how you articulated your position. I disagreed with most of it, but, you know, and she shook her head. She says, I know. I said, but, you know, you made a good, you presented a good case for yourself. And she was very respectful of the other people. She didn't call anybody names or yell at anybody.
Good.
So it was good for her to be on that side of things. And she also asked some probing questions of the girl who wanted to have the quinceañera, which revealed that the girl really didn't know what she wanted. And so one of the things that came out of it is, like, you know, the idea of cultural appropriation seems to have kind of a, at least in my mind, has a, what do you call it when you have degrees from, not prism, but range?
A continuum
of where you are. You know, you can, like, the example I gave was, like, when I was in college, the girl I dated in college was an Anglo girl. Is that what I should call you? Anglo, European American. What is it okay if I call you white?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Anyway, I'm being slightly facetious. Anyway, this girl I met when I was a junior in college, I met her in one of my classes, and ironically, it was a Latin American history class. But she caught my eye, not because she was pretty, obviously she was pretty, but the other thing is that she was wearing a Mexican spring dress. Hmm. And that's, if you don't know what that is, they're generally bright colors, red, bright blues, and turquoise, and they have all sorts of elaborate embroidery, normally flowers embroidered into them. And I thought she really looked pretty in that. And so I asked the question. I said, is she just wearing it because it's a comfortable attire during the, you know, this time of the year? Is that okay? Or is she appropriating the culture? And even the girl said, no, you know, it's okay for her to wear that. And I was like, okay, so where does it stop being okay? So then the one example that we could all agree upon is some college frat, arriba, ande.
Okay.
And so the explanation that I got from this particular girl was that a disrespect of the culture is a definite sign of cultural appropriation. But there was still a small segment of the kids that thought that any use. And so this, you know, majority of my kids are either Hispanic or African American. And so the African American kids started talking about the way girls wear their hair. And even, I didn't know this was a thing, but the hoop earrings.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently that's, at least girls in my school believe that that's a black girl thing. And for a girl that's not a black girl to wear the big hoop rings may be an example of cultural appropriation. So, what I found fascinating about all this is I had to take time out to puff the cigar to make sure it didn't go out. Is like, we live in America. We live in the United States of America. And I asked him, I said, what is the culture of America? What can you say that is truly American?
Yeah.
What's an American food?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, this idea of America being the great melting pot. Was that just an idea, or is that a reality? And what does it mean?
Well, see, I've heard historians talk about that we're really not a melting pot, because a melting pot suggests that everything blends together.
Right.
I've heard other people describe it as a tapestry, that it's all connected yet maintaining its individual identities.
Okay.
I kind of like that analogy. And what I was trying to explain to the kids, because, again, I only have two or three white kids in the class, and so I have to be careful with these conversations because I want them to feel comfortable as well. It's like you have to understand that when you look at white people, you think they're all the same. And some of them identify with their Irish heritage or their Italian heritage or their German or Polish or whatever the case may be. Some may not. And that's okay too. But at the end of the day, we kind of throw all those things together. We eat Chinese food, we eat Italian food, we eat Mexican food. I feel like I'm appropriating that. I'm enjoying that's part of, you know, I think that to be American means that you take a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Right.
And mix it all together, and that's what we are. Because even jazz music, which some people contend is like the only art form that America's created, doesn't have all of its roots here. It's influenced by, you know, African art and other things, so.
Right.
I have a mass issue with cultural appropriation in general, at least in the way that our society tends to view it, or what they call cultural appropriation these days. And it stems from what you were talking about with the respect thing. There are, like the frat boy example is one example of clear, I mean, that, yes, that is what it is. But, like, there was this, I think it was a Utah high school girl that wore a traditional Chinese dress.
Yeah, that's what I framed the conversation
right. with. Right, so, but a whole bunch of, I haven't looked at the post, but from what I've seen, a whole bunch of people from China were like, she's fine. And I think that anything, I think it's just another form, not always, you know, there's a lot of actual cases where I would say, yes, that's cultural appropriation. But I think on the whole, with a society with this instant gratification, and let me be a bully on the internet and find something to complain about, and God forbid I can't find something to be offended about today, that it gets blown way out of context. Everybody's got to have something to complain about.
Yeah.
And I just cannot stand... If you want to say frat boy with sombrero and a fake mustache all day long, you can have that. But, okay, for instance, one of my managers at work spends a lot of time overseas because he's the global capital asset manager for my firm. Well, he goes to China and Japan on a pretty regular basis. He says when he goes to Japan, they have one of the hotels he's in, they actually have basements where they actually dig in the ground for the natural hot springs. And everybody wears Komodos. If he did that here, it'd be cultural appropriation. But it's what you do. Now, granted, you could say, oh, it's because he's in Japan. So I'll take another example. When they did Ghost in the Shell, the live-action film based off the anime, a good chunk of the characters in that movie were white people.
Right.
And America blew their gasket. Well, it's based off a Japanese anime. Why aren't you casting Japanese people? There were multiple videos out there where people went and interviewed Japanese people in right. Japan, and their response was, if they're right for the role, what do we care?
Yeah.
Like, and so America just gets her jollies off and finds something to complain about. And again, I'm not saying there's not actual cases of it. I'm just saying that if you look at a lot of the cases that you see on the media or across news feeds or wherever you get your information from, a lot of what we would call cultural appropriation nowadays is it's hogwash. Yeah, if it's done out of respect, I mean, if it's done, no matter what it is, whether it's a Komodo, a traditional Chinese dress, I don't care, even if it's a sombrero, if you're doing it out of respect and doing it in the proper fashion for which it was intended, you cannot tell me that's cultural appropriation simply because I'm not of your culture.
All right, so one of the arguments that the girl made is that in order for you to properly respect it, you have to know what it means.
Oh, I would agree. I would agree, yeah. Most certainly, if you're going to do something along those lines, then yes, you most certainly should do your homework and understand its history and the background and be able to speak to it if asked. But the no one should be able to come to you and jump and go, oh, you're appropriating. You go fly a kite. Let's have a conversation before you jump your guns there.
Or maybe flying the kite is appropriating someone's culture.
Well, I was going to ask this question, you know, to appropriate, as we're using it here, is a verb. And one of the meanings that I see on Dr. Google is to take possession of or make use of exclusively for oneself, often without permission. So I guess my first question is, who do you ask for permission? And I gather that basically the assumption is that it's you shouldn't even ask for permission. You just don't have the right to it. And then the issue becomes, okay, so the guy, the frat boy that's putting on the sombrero and the fake mustache and running around with a sombrero on and a poncho and yelling, riba, riba, and shooting in the air like Pepe Gonzalez or whatever, he's clearly making fun of something. And that's just rude and ill-mannered to start with. But so if I have fondue at home, am I culturally appropriating, what is that, French?
French.
I mean, I don't even know. And then the other question I had is, who complains about this? Is it truly just Hispanics and Blacks? I mean, do we have the French, like a French group in the United States, all up in arms because people are appropriating their culture? Or is it specifically this almost a victim mindset that is attached to this?
Well, I definitely think you're on to something with the whole victimhood thing. And I would say that's not limited to only Blacks and Latinos, as the people on the left.
Yeah, Hispanic is a made-up word. But anyway.
Well, it's another discussion for another day.
Yeah.
I mean, it may be made up, but I think that if somebody wants to identify Hispanic, that's okay.
Well, let me just say this, because I looked it up one time, okay? The original use of the term Hispanic was for the census, and it specifically was to identify Mexicans living in the United States. Not anybody else.
Well,
Mexicans.
I don't know if I agree with that because I do agree with the fact that it originates from the 1980 census.
Yes.
And it's the first time on record that that term was used. I think it was an effort to combine all Spanish speakers.
Yeah, which is really crazy because now they have to go Hispanic white or Hispanic non-white. Have you seen that?
Yes. Yeah. Because prior to 1980, I mean, I don't even know what it looks like now, but I know that my birth certificate says my parents are white.
Yeah.
Because that's the race. And so birth certificates don't make any distinction about ethnicity. At least I don't think they do.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a different... It's a different issue, but it's related to it. Because we did get into discussion about how do groups like to identify themselves. And I think it's telling. I think people that tend to... Spanish people from who have origins from Spanish-speaking countries... who identify as Hispanic tend to be more conservative.
Mm.
And those that tend to be more liberal will either call themselves Latinos or Chicanos if they're Mexican-American descent.
I have no idea.
And I, you know, this came up in the conversation. I hate being called a Chicano because that's a political term that came out of the late 1960s and 1970s out of a political movement in California. And... The time I shared this with the kids, when I was in law school, the only Hispanic or Latino organization at UT Law School was the Chicano Law Student Society, or Chicano Law Student something or other, CHELSA. I can't remember what it stood for. And I thought, what a limiting organization. So you're saying that your organization is only for Mexican Americans? What about the Salvadorian, the Honduran, the Cuban?
Right.
You know? And the other thing about it is that I never liked being identified as Mexican-American. So, first of all, don't ever call me a Mexican. Because I wasn't born in Mexico.
Right.
But secondly, I don't like the term Mexican-American because that seems to me to kind of suggest that you're only half American.
Right.
And, you know, because if I get asked, well, what are you? And that's been asked. And some people... That's microaggression, by the way, if you ask that question.
Right.
I'm not offended by that. I'm going to inform people. I'm gonna be like, I'm as American as you are. And that came up as part of the conversation, too. Is like, you know, a white person or a black person is never questioned as to whether or not they're American. But somebody who's Hispanic.
Yeah.
You know, because like Dirk Nowitzki, all right? He's German. Now, I think he's naturalized here in the United States now. I think he's become a citizen. You see him walking down the street and you don't know that he's a NBA basketball player that immigrated from Germany. You think he's American.
Yeah.
Like, our valedictorian is Asian. He's of Chinese descent. But he was born in Allen, Texas.
Yeah.
And the kids will say, well, Michael's Chinese. No, he's not Chinese. He's an American. He was born here.
Yeah.
Just like most of you were. So... Anyway, I got off topic a little bit, but I think it's related.
Well, I think it's related because you were because of what you were first pointing out. What is the American culture? You know, what is American food? I guess most people would say hamburgers.
But even hamburgers aren't from here.
No. Pizza's not from... I mean, what's, you know, greens, maybe? Corn and greens. That's American food. Right?
Chicken fried steak?
Yeah, I guess so.
Southern food?
Yeah. I don't know. Cheese from Wisconsin. That's so if I eat cheese, am I appropriating Wisconsin's culture? Because cheese is a cultured product.
I don't want to belittle this in any sense of the word because some of the kids got very emotional.
Really?
Yeah, one girl in particular who apparently is half Native American. Started to tear up and cry a little bit when she was talking about people wearing headdresses. And she was very offended by that. So, you know, we had to be mindful of that when we were having the discussion. It's one of the
which time out, headdress is like a few tribes. That was not a common Native American garb. Right?
I I'm going to take your word for it. I don't know. But I don't know. I think that the pendulum has swung so far. It is related to this notion of identity politics. Is I think that you're onto something with the notion of victimhood part being related to it, because I think that some people within some of these groups are so hungry to be recognized.
Yeah.
That the only way that they think they can do that is by claiming that you're stealing from their culture. Like somehow, someone, and in my mind, the kids that were talking about this, they didn't come up with these ideas on their own.
No.
These are adults that have put those ideas in their heads. I felt sorry for the little girl who said she wanted to have a quinceañera, because she came out of this conversation not looking very good.
Hmm.
And part of it was she didn't really fully understand what she was asking to do. And she got an earful. I think at the end of the day, all she wanted to do was wear a pretty dress.
Well, yeah, I was going to say what she wanted was what they used to call a Sweet 16 party. Because that would be the quote-unquote American version of that.
Right.
You turn 16 and you get to wear a pretty dress and people come over and make a big fuss over you and you get a lot of presents. That's kind of what a quinceañera is, right?
Well, and there's a lot more to that. And that was one of the other arguments I made us. Like, even in the various Hispanic cultures, there's not an agreement on what a quinceañera is. I think it was Julia Alvarez that wrote a book about quinceañeras, and there's a documentary out about quinceañeras as well. There's not a really clear idea of where quinceañeras originate from. It may have been Spain, but Cubans have a version of it, Mexicans have a version of it, and they're all slightly different. They have, and what's kind of happened is some of those things have been blended here in the United States. There are some, but one thing that is common to all of them, and I brought this up, is it's like even the traditional notion of a Mexican quinceañera, which most of my kids are Mexican origin, that's not even the same anymore, because the original roots of that is rooted in Catholicism. A traditional quinceañera starts with a mass.
Really?
Yes. Where the girl is processed in and there's a blessing and all sorts of other things. And then you have the court and all of that other stuff at the reception. But what's happened now is, well, first of all, you know, not all Hispanics are Catholic anymore. So you're having quinceañeras in non-denominational churches. And they don't know what to do because they don't have liturgy.
Right.
But they know they should do something. And it's all become about the party, mm-hmm. and the court and all the things. But there's some great symbolism about it. Essentially, what a quinceañera is a girl becoming a woman. Because there's one of the beautiful things that takes place during the reception part of the quinceañera is that a girl, when she's presented initially, will be wearing like flats, and now the kind of the modern version of this is wearing tennis shoes.
Okay.
And then at some point, her father gives her a pair of heels. And the heels, the exchange of shoes, and her putting on the heels is a representation of her going from a child to an adult.
Okay.
And then there's the father-daughter dance, but this little girl didn't want any of that. She wanted the dress.
Sure.
And what's funny is that after the whole conversation, the majority of the kids were like, if you want the dress, wear the dress.
Yeah.
But don't call it a quinceañera. They were pretty adamant about not wanting her to call it a quinceañera.
Interesting.
Now, out of curiosity, the student that's got... Did you say she is Native American? I mean, I guess she is.
Yeah.
She is Native American.
Yeah.
What other complaints her concerns that she have? The headdress is a legitimate one. If you know the history of a headdress, then no one has any business outside of a tribe wearing a headdress.
That's all she was able to say, because then she got emotional and started crying.
Yeah, I'll back her 100% on that one.
But
Because that's an earned, I hate to use the word status, but I mean, it's essentially what it is. But it's earned.
Yeah.
The right to wear a headdress is.
Well, I would say that wearing that is right up there with the frat boy that dresses up with the sombrero and the fake mustache.
Yeah. But again, I think it goes back to what we were talking about with knowing what it is you're trying to do or would like to do, knowing the history, and then determining if it's appropriate, because like a headdress would never be.
Yeah, but the other thing is that we don't allow people to be ignorant. And I don't mean, I mean ignorant by the true definition of the word ignorant. They just don't know.
Right.
Why can't we meet them where they are there?
No, we should. But it should be done with charity. Yeah. And that's the problem that we have as a society is this, oh, well, you messed up, so now I'm about to take you to, you know, or I'm going to take you out back and just pummel you.
Yeah, but they don't really do that. They do that. All of that's done on social media. Let's blast them on social media.
Right.
Let's give out their personal information and let people just.
Yeah, here's their Facebook page. Here's their Instagram. Go have fun and, you know, meet me face to face and say these same things to me. It's a different subject, but.
Right.
So the conclusion of this conversation that I had with the kids led to this, and I was trying to shape and guide the conversation, obviously. I think that's part of my role as a teacher is to, can't just have this conversation, I have there be a life lesson out of it. And one of the things that I was trying to get them to realize, I said, look, in a world where everyone is fighting for respect for their individual identities, all right, so let's just accept that for what it is for right now. But where does the mutual respect come? I said, there's too much disrespect going on. I said, at the end of the day, and I was talking to the kids, I said, y'all need to be able to respect each other as, and I had to be careful because I came really close to say you're made in the image and likeness of God.
Right.
But so the way I framed it is I simply said, look, you all have dignity simply because you are. You are a human being. It doesn't matter how beautiful you are, how smart you are, how rich you are, any of that. None of that matter. What the color of your skin is, what your gender identification, none of that in the big scheme of things is what gives you your dignity. Your dignity is because you are.
Right.
And I said, you got to be really careful because even those of you that claim to be victimized by somebody appropriating your culture are treating the other person as other. I said, there's a real danger there. When you start treating people like they're other or monsters, it's really easy for you to dehumanize them.
Yeah.
And mistreat them. And I said, you have to be mindful of that. I said, at the end of the day, you as the next generation have got to learn how to respect each other. You know, which led to a conversation about it saying, look, there's a lot of different ideas going on. And it almost, there was a brief moment when it looked like the conversation was going to lose control. Because somebody said something like, the conversation started to turn to hair and corn rolls. And there's some other type of traditional African hairstyle. And one of the girls said, y'all. And that was a trigger. Oh, what do you mean by y'all? I was like, whoa, time out. We had an agreement at the very beginning that if we're going to have this discussion, people can't be offended by the words. They're just words.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, why do we act like words are so violent?
Yeah.
You know, I understand that there are some words we don't use. But those words aren't being used. Just because you were called y'all, you're ready to have a fight with this person? You got to get that in check.
Well, of course, y'all implies a separation.
Yes.
But the whole point of cultural appropriation is the support of a separation.
Yes.
So if everybody's going, you can't have a quinceañera because you're not Mexican, and so somebody says, well, y'all think blah, 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 that's a legitimate use of the phrase, right?
Yeah.
So that's very interesting. You want to have it both ways.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the problem. And the whole thing with with this identity politics and stuff is it starts to fall upon itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you were able to bring up the fact of the human dignity just because they exist. I think that's critical, and I hope they heard what you were saying. And I hope it gave them food for thought that will bear fruit later. Because at the end of the day, like you said, this girl, she just wanted to wear a pretty dress.
Yeah.
And it's what she had seen, because she's not in a society, for an example, what I'm going to call high society, that used to be a thing in the United States.
Right.
Where you would have a coming out party. Because that was the other thing. There's a Sweet 16. There's a coming out. There's a, what are they? I mean, that would be a huge thing.
Like the debutantes.
Yes. And the other thing I was thinking of, I had a question and an observation. Is there a male equivalent to the quinceañera?
Well, that's a funny thing. Because this is purely, in my opinion, I don't know enough about the history. So if anybody wants to fact check me and let us know, please do. But I believe this is very much an American thing. That boys now are asking for quinceañeras. And I'm sorry, that's just bizarre to me.
So how is that different from a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah?
Yeah, you know, I don't... So, this could be a whole episode on its own, and I am fascinated by this, because I've done a little bit of research on this subject matter, the idea that, you know, in older days and in different cultures, there are rites of passage
right.
for boys to transition into manhood.
Right.
Where there are actually rituals associated with it.
Yeah.
We don't have that here.
No, we don't. At all. Not in any formalized way.
Right. So I do think that there is, among our boys, I think there is a hunger for that.
Just made me wonder if somehow, some way, the timing of confirmation was oddly some way to try to address that.
That's an interesting take on it. You know, my view on that as it relates to boys is twofold. Is one, we used to live at a time when boys became of a certain age, they were fit to be able to help the father do work right. on the farm or the ranch or
hunt
or so, apprentice and yeah. whatever.
Like getting your first gun might have been.
And because so many of us work in service industry now, that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if we need to think about how we fill that void for boys.
Yeah. You know, it seems to me that there have been different ways in which that gap has tried to be addressed. I think of the Boy Scouts of America becoming an Eagle Scout, you know, or progressing through, you know, those, you know, with the Boy Scouts, there's a definite progression. You're a first class Eagle, and then you go into Explorers and that kind of thing. So that would have been one way for somebody to feel like they've progressed through. Seems like today it's the prom almost. I mean, you know, it's probably not a one-to-one correspondence, but I mean, that's an excuse for everybody to get dressed up, and it's the end of high school or whatever, and yeah, I don't know. The senior prom is like this rite of passage, maybe. I don't know. That's all been really made fuzzy. Partly, I think, because of the whole breakdown, a consequence of the sexual revolution. A lot of the things that would have been associated with becoming an adult are being experienced by people that are 13 and 14 years old.
Yeah. Did you go to your prom? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, there's a story there. I'll remind you of it later.
For my Stogie, Mr. Goji, after hours?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't remember. I must have blocked that out of my memory banks quite well.
You remember my high school sweetheart?
So how did it end with these folks? You mentioned that the girl came out not looking very well.
Well, I think that there was a good chunk of the kids that thought that she was... I don't know that she came across as... I think at the end, they didn't think she was really appropriating. I think that she was on the... in their minds, on the verge of appropriating because she didn't know what she was asking for.
Yeah.
And there was this notion that was thrown out by the articulate girl that picking and choosing parts of the culture that you like is appropriation. Hmm. And, man, I have trouble with that because isn't that what we've done as part of this experiment of this republic that we... That's what makes us work, is that we celebrate the diversity of all these things that we like, you know, food, art, music, and that's all blended together to become, in my mind, that's what makes us America. That it's not that we have this one thing that is America, it's that we have all these different things that we celebrate together to be.
Yeah, you just made me think that today, if somebody decided today, if this had never been a thing in the United States, and somebody decided today that they wanted to have a St. Patrick's Day parade, wouldn't that be cultural appropriation?
I don't know.
I know that every time I go to the gun range, I'm appropriating the Chinese.
Appropriating the Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Because of the gunpowder?
That's right.
There you go.
They discovered it.
Well, every time we write, we're appropriating the Chinese because of paper.
Yeah, I mean, so at the end, I don't know where that takes us. I mean, you know, I think it's good to respect other cultures, yes, but...
I was going to say, I think I just dislike this concept of labeling it cultural appropriation and then shaming somebody because of that.
Right, and you're right about the shaming part.
That's just a way to bully when you think you've been victimized, I think. I think that the key issue here is respect and also a recognition of the fact that there are cultures that are in this country, and it wouldn't make any sense for me at all to try to organize a lion dance here in the cul-de-sac for Chinese New Year, because I don't know anything about that. But I could buy everything I need from Amazon. I'm certain of it.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, because that was an example that was brought up by one of the kids.
Yeah. So when you see... Now, to me, I enjoy attending something like that. And it does not bother me, because the part of the lion dance and the dragon dance and all that, these are martial art club things. I would imagine that if I went to China and tried to participate in a lion dance, that they would have a problem with that. Because all you're going to see are Chinese martial artists doing a lion dance. It's fun to watch. It's neat to see that what they're doing. Doesn't bother me, and I don't think it bothers anybody here in the United States if there are white people participating in that, because they would have achieved a certain level of proficiency in the martial art, or they would not be involved in being in the lion dance. So that goes back to what you're saying about understanding what it is that you're trying to be a part of and agreeing to be part of that. But if I was just trying to organize a lion dance here with the local folks and say, here, let's just carry this thing around, that would be insensitive and inappropriate, I think.
So let me give one more example that came up in the conversation. The Met Gala took place recently. And the theme of the Met Gala was the influence of Christianity on art. Hmm. And so several of the stars that showed up were dressed in fashion that was inspired by Catholicism or Christianity. Rihanna showed up with what can only be described as a Pope hat. Sarah Jessica Parker showed up with a nativity scene on her head. And Kim Kardashian just wore a gold dress that had a bunch of crosses embroidered on it.
Okay.
And people were offended by that.
Really?
I'm like, I mean, as a Catholic, do I really want to make a big deal out of that? What is this? what does that make me look like if I'm that sensitive that I just like, they look crazy. It's ridiculous fashion.
So is the national pastime of the United States of America to be offended?
I think so.
Wow.
At least among a particular cultural elite, I believe.
Let's just look at the world we live in, though. Everything has to be PC.
Yeah.
You can't have an opinion anymore that is different from the quote-unquote majority on anything.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I was just sitting here thinking, Tiffany may have gone to somebody's quinceañera, for all I know. I would have never, ever thought about having one for her because that's not my culture.
Right.
You know? It's too bad that this poor girl who just wanted to wear a pretty dress, and I mean, she's obviously been to one or seen it or something, and there's a lot to like about it if you're a girl, I would guess. You get a lot of attention, you get to wear a pretty dress, you're treated like a queen. I mean, who wouldn't want that?
I love being treated like a queen.
Yeah.
But there are some things about this that were disconcerting to me because there's some assumptions that some of these kids were making, which to me means it reflects the ideas of people that influence them, like the LULAC kids. I know where that's coming from. So one of the girls in my class is half black, half Hispanic, and she looks black. But she embraces both sides of her culture.
Sure.
She calls her Mexican-American grandmother, Juelita.
Okay.
And she had a quinceañera.
Really?
And she looks black.
Yeah.
But she identifies as both. And I applaud her for that.
Yeah.
And it made me think, you know, like, what's going to happen 13 years down the road if Gabby wants to have a quinceañera? Okay? Her last name is Gonzalez. By all accounts, she's Hispanic, but she didn't quote look Hispanic by whatever standard that is. Now, that's a whole different argument because Hispanics look the spectrum. They can look white and they can look black and everything in between.
Yeah, I mean, I see a lot of Hispanic people who look Asian to me.
Yes. You know, and I've tried to argue with the kids. I said, that's the beauty of being Hispanic. We represent all people.
Yeah.
But did you try to pigeonhole people in a certain way or a culture to look like you look? Yeah. That's dangerous.
Yeah. So do we have any conclusions on this? Because believe it or not, we're at 56 minutes.
I mean, the only conclusion that I can draw from it is that I think that we as people need to do a better job of having conversations about commonality.
Hmm. Yeah.
And there's way too much focus on difference. And we don't talk enough about what we have in common.
It's so funny that there's this focus on difference when there's so much verbal noise about how we're all the same. And we shouldn't be treated differently. Except when we should. We're a very confused country.
I agree. So, food for thought.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin. What advice would you give your younger self? And I'm really curious of at what point, which younger self are you giving advice to? What age group?
I'd say between 15 to 18.
So, can we frame this properly so everybody knows how old you are?
I'm almost 34.
Okay.
15, maybe early 20s. Maybe up to early 20s. It's kind of twofold. I would start with a better utilization of my God-given gifts. There were a couple talents. I don't want to say that they're completely been diminished, but I never utilized them fully. And I still don't. And then... So that covers basically 15 to 18, and then 18 to early 20s to tag on top of that, a better focus on faith.
All right.
And on God. I could have avoided a lot of things had I put both of those in place. Not to say I have any regrets, because as we've talked about before, I'm where I'm at now because of decisions I made then. And I wouldn't change that.
Because of the butterfly effect.
Yes.
Right.
But things could have been different. It's hard for me because it's like, if I'd stuck with my acting more, if I had continued with my writing, there's no telling where that would have led.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful to have the opportunity to be where I'm at now with my faith, to still have the opportunity to grow in my faith, to be open to God's will, to utilize my gifts. But I think I would start there. Because I recently had to take a big step in that, currently, taking my own advice, how to give to my younger self. I actually just sent an email to St. Catherine's, stepping away from the lecture ministry.
Yeah.
Officially. And I have no... Basically, what I told them was I'm basically... And it was not... And it's not a fabrication. I'm entering a time of discernment where I'm going to spend... I've already started, but I'm going to go deeper with it. Praying about where God wants me within the community.
Right.
And I've opened myself up to the idea that God's will may simply be to focus on my home life.
Right.
Become the Catholic husband and father that I need to be for myself and for my family, and to ensure that my daughter grows strong in the faith and do everything I can to ensure that she keeps that faith. But no, anytime I've thought about my youth, and today, for instance, I called one of I've got an overtime project at work I'm doing over the next couple of weekends, and we have environmental safety and health team throughout our building, and the woman in charge of my building had questions about how we were going to go about completing the work we need to complete this weekend, and I called her to check in to see what she wanted to talk about. I figured it was that. But I left a voicemail with a British accent. And she loved that. And then started this whole conversation about, why are you here? If you've got those kind of gifts, you should use them for this and that. And that into conversation about me being in theater when I was younger, having been accepted to Booker T. Washington, and this other thing. And it was just another example of, here's somebody else who recognizes a talent that I haven't put in full use.
Right.
Even when I was utilized. Because even Kate, my wife, has encouraged me to get back into community theater, which is what this woman was asking about today. She's like, do you do community theater? I was like, I've thought about it. My wife's encouraging it. She's even encouraging me getting back into stand-up comedy. I don't know that I want to do that. To be frank, I'm too lazy for stand-up comedy. Yeah. it's a lot of work. It's a lot more work than people that aren't in the business understand.
Yeah.
And I'm more Johnny on the spot funny than I am. Although I have the ability to write, I'm more of a storyteller. And writing comedy isn't, at least historically, hasn't been my forte. So yeah, I mean, just better utilize my gifts and with a better emphasis, stronger emphasis on God.
All right.
Well, I'm going to say something about that. I think that it's easy to look back and wish that you had a more serious approach to your faith when you were younger. But I think your father has something to do with that, because I think our children are a reflection of where we are in our walks as we are parenting. And I think that it's not entirely fair for you to put that onus completely on you, because while I came back to the church because of you when you were about 12, you missed out on a lot. You know, you didn't get the benefit of me fathering you as the man I am now. And so that may have helped with you being more solid in your faith at a younger age. And I think the lesson that could be learned from that is, and I think we're seeing that, is that you're being deliberate in the way you're parenting your daughter. And at the end of the day, that's all we can do is move forward from where we are.
Yeah.
You know, I think that I'm a better father now than I was then. And I think as a better father now, I help you be a better father. And that's all we can do.
Yeah.
You know, I would lie if I said I didn't have regrets about being more present as a Catholic father when you were going through those developmental points. But I can't go back and change that. Well, all I can do is be more present now. And I think to your credit, you've been deliberate also about us spending more time together, like spending time tonight. You and I try to get together most Saturdays to have lunch. And that helps with your development as a father. It helps my development as a grandfather. And so I think that, I guess the point I'm trying to make is it's never too late.
No, I think the quote-unquote good thief reference points out the fact that it's never too late. I think that's a good point, though. We are where we are. And we can look back on what we wish we had done, and we can do them now. And then we can try to share those lessons with other people, which is what we're trying to do with this advice to your younger self thing. You know, if somebody's listening to this podcast and they hear something that strikes a chord with them, I would say, good. And it is never too late. And if that means you need to reach out to your kid you haven't really connected with and do that. If it means that you need to reinvigorate your own faith so that you would even know what to try to do with your kid, then do that, you know, but start somewhere. And don't worry about might have been, because there's nothing to gain there. Worry about what might be and focus on that.
All right.
For those that are interested, my British accent's horrible. I can do different dialects, but it's not quite as bad as Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins, but it's close.
There you go.
The only one I do really well is my Irish accent, and that's confirmed by actual Irish folk, which is nice.
Yeah.
And if you want to help me with a Scottish accent, I'd love that.
Can't help you with that.
Final thoughts?
I don't have anything new to say about my cigar that I haven't said already. I had to even it out one time, but it stayed lit otherwise. That was because the wrapper spoke more than anything. Blended Scotch whiskey aged 12 years. It's got a fuller flavor to it than just the regular white label. Again, I think the Scotch snobs would turn their nose up at all of these, but I like them. So, and they, Scotch goes good with a cigar because of that peaty undertone to it. And I've gotten where I really enjoy.
Kevin?
Well, I've never smoked a Drew Estates I didn't like, so.
There you go.
That continues to be the case. I was trying to get deeper into mine, but it was irritating my sinuses, and I was trying to keep it lit, and it didn't work.
So, Don, since you've never had an Arturo Fuente before, what did you...
Well, actually, let me just say that this Sungrown is billed as a medium-strength cigar, but it's been in my box for a good amount of time. I don't know if age made it stronger, but the back end of that cigar really started to affect me.
Really?
I started to feel a little lightheaded.
Oh, wow.
It was starting to have that kick my butt feeling about it. I'm perspiring heavily, and it's not because it's warm in the house. It's because of the cigar. And I'm getting that little shaky feeling that I don't like. So it was stronger than I anticipated. I didn't eat a big meal. I had a couple of breakfast tacos for dinner. So that may be part of it too, but yeah, not liking the way I feel right now.
I had a Taco Bell taco and a bean burrito prior to my event here.
So, I'm going to close this up.
Smoke them if you got them.
Good night. Bye.